You know that little buzz you get when a package shows up, especially one of those smaller things you ordered online and somehow it just sailed through customs, no extra fees?
Fact.
Well, get ready because that whole experience, it might be about to change pretty significantly.
Yeah, that's right.
So today we're doing a deep dive into some really big shifts coming for online shopping, especially if you're someone who, frequently buys those smaller, less expensive items.
Exactly. We're digging into the changes coming to the U.S. de minimis shipping rule. And the big headline here is the plan to end that $800 duty-free threshold, specifically for goods coming from China.
Okay, right. And
Yeah.
maybe other countries later.
And potentially, yeah, could expand to other countries down the road.
Okay, de minimis. Let's break that down first. What exactly is this rule we're talking about right now?
Okay, so think of it like this. Since 2016, basically, if you order something valued at $800 or less and it's coming into the US, it's generally been free from duties and taxes.
800.
Yeah. There is a limit, though. One package like that per person per day. It's all under what's called Section 321 of the Tariff Act.
Gotcha. And it sounds like this isn't some obscure little thing. We're talking big numbers here, right?
Oh, absolutely massive scale. US Customs and Border Protection, CBP, they're currently processing something like 4 million of these de minimis shipments. Every
About a
single
day.
4 million daily.
Daily. And just for context, back in, say, 2018, that number was closer to maybe 1 million. So it's just exploded.
Wow. Okay. So what happened? Why the huge surge? What flipped the switch?
Well, a couple of really key things. First, back in 2016, that threshold jumped way up. It went from $200 to $800.
Ah, okay. Big difference.
Huge difference. And that just made it so much easier, less friction, less red tape for these low-value shipments to just flow in duty-free.
Makes sense.
And second, you've got the whole business model of those fast fashion giants like Shein and the variety apps like Temu. They really, really built their strategy around using this rule.
Well, it let them ship directly from factories, often in China, straight to U.S. consumers at prices that, frankly, most U.S. retailers just couldn't compete with.
Right. Those super low prices are definitely a draw. But I feel like I've also heard some concerns, maybe downsides to this growing so fast, stuff slipping through.
You're hitting on a really important point there
Yeah.
because, yeah, the lower inspection rates that often come with these de minimis shipments have definitely raised eyebrows.
Okay.
And this is where it gets, pretty serious. There's been bipartisan concern voiced in the Senate that this loophole, if you want to call it that, could be exploited for illegal stuff.
Like what?
Things like counterfeit goods flooding the market, and even really worryingly dangerous things like fentanyl potentially slipping through more easily.
Right, okay. So that's the backdrop. A massive system, huge growth, but also some serious concerns bubbling up. So what's our mission with this deep dive today? What should listeners take away?
Yeah, our goal is really to cut through all the noise and figure out what these changes actually mean for you, the listener. Whether you're just someone who loves finding those online deals,
Right.
or maybe you work in e-commerce or logistics or supply chain, these shifts could really impact costs, delivery times, maybe even the whole landscape of online shopping.
Got it. Okay, let's get into the specifics then. What exactly is pushing this change? It sounds like it's not just one single action.
No. Definitely not. It's coming from a few different directions. First off, there's an executive order. This was issued back in April 2025.
Okay, an EO.
Yeah. And it specifically targets China and Hong Kong. It says effective May 2nd, 2025, no more de minimis for goods coming from there.
May 2nd, that's soon.
Very soon. And a key point here, even if you ordered something before May 2nd, if it actually arrives after that date, it's going to be subject to duties. No grandfathering in.
Okay, so that's one piece, the White House targeting China and Hong Kong directly. What else?
Then you have CBP, Customs and Border Protection. They put out what's called a Notice of Proposed Rulemaking, an NPRM.
Right, where they float new rules.
Exactly. This one's called Entry of Low-Value Shipments. And it suggests several changes, like needing more data fields for these shipments.
More info required.
Yeah, much more detail. It also proposes giving CBP the authority to just say, nope, this particular item isn't eligible for de minimis anymore. And it pulls in elements from a pilot program they ran called Type 86, which is all about testing better data collection.
Okay, so CBP is looking at tightening the rules generally. When might that happen?
Well, the public comment period for that NPRM closed back in March. The expectation is we'll see a final rule sometime this summer 2025. So this could affect all low-value shipments, potentially, not just those from specific countries named in the EO.
And I'm guessing Congress is involved too. Lawmakers must have opinions on this.
Oh, absolutely. There are a few bills floating around. One is the Import Security and Fairness Act, H.R. 322.
Okay, what's that one aim to do?
This one wants to block de minimis treatment for goods coming from countries the U.S. considers non-market economies, and also from companies on lists related to forced labor, like the UFLPA list.
Right, the Uyghur Forced Labor Prevention Act.
Exactly. And this bill has a really eye-catching proposal. It suggests dropping the de minimis threshold way, way down, maybe to just
$10. $10, wow.
Yeah, down to $10 if the country of origin isn't, like, certified or approved in some way. This bill got reintroduced in January 2025, and the House Ways and Means Committee is set to hold hearings on it.
A $10 threshold would basically end duty-free for almost everything ordered online from overseas. That's huge. Any other bills?
Yep. There's another one called the Leveling the Playing Field Act 2.0. This one's a bit more focused on trade enforcement tools.
How so?
It would make it easier for the Department of Commerce to essentially add up lots of small shipments from the same exporter when they're investigating potential harm to U.S. industries. Think anti-dumping or countervailing duty cases.
So stopping companies from maybe avoiding duties by breaking up big orders into lots of tiny ones.
Kinda, yeah. It's about looking at the cumulative impact. It also aims to speed up those AD/CVD investigations. This one was reintroduced in February 2025, and it has bipartisan support in the Senate, which is always notable.
So multiple angles here, executive action, new agency rules, several pieces of legislation, anything even stricter being discussed.
There is one more, though it's still in the early stages. It's called the End China's De Minimis Abuse Act. Right now, it's just a draft discussion paper, not a formal bill.
And what's the idea there?
Pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
A total ban on de minimis shipments from China, plus mandatory quarterly reporting on these imports. Very targeted, very strict.
Interesting. But you mentioned earlier, Canada and Mexico are sort of separate cases for now.
That's right. Under the USMCA trade deal and separate orders, they currently keep their de minimis relief. So the May 2nd change we talked about, that's specifically impacting China and Hong Kong for now.
Okay, so we've got the drivers, the different mechanisms. Let's nail down the timeline. May 2nd, 2025, end of de minimis for China, Hong Kong. What else is key?
So beyond May 2nd, the next big milestone is likely that CBP final rule on entry of low-value shipments, or ELVS. We're expecting that, like I said, sometime in Q3 2025, so summer or early fall.
And what might be in that final rule?
That's where we could see the details fleshed out. Things like those expanded data requirements we talked about, maybe denied party filters, automatically blocking shipments from sanctioned individuals or companies.
Okay.
And potentially specific types of items being excluded from de minimis altogether. Some possibilities floated include apparel, maybe food products, over-the-counter drugs.
Which would mean more work for brokers.
A lot more work. They'll likely need much more granular information, potentially down to the specific product SKU level, including the harmonized tariff schedule code, the HTS code, and maybe data needed by partner government agencies, PGA data. Gets complex fast.
So definitely more data, more checks. And what about Congress potentially acting later in the year?
That's definitely still on the table. H.R. 322, the Import Security and Fairness Act, or maybe another similar bill, could pass later in 2025, and that could lower the threshold, maybe drastically like that $10 idea, or even eliminate it entirely for all countries or certain groups of countries.
And the potential impact of that?
Financially, it's significant. Estimates suggest that kind of broader change could bring in an extra, say, $8 to $12 billion a year in duties.
Wow. Okay. That's serious revenue. So let's pivot to the impact. How is all this likely to shake out for different groups? Starting with those big e-commerce players, Temu, Shein, the ones who really benefited from the old system.
Yeah, they're bracing for impact. Reports suggest they're expecting they'll need to raise prices probably somewhere in the range of 15% to 25% just to cover the new duties they'll have to pay on shipments from China.
That's a noticeable price hike for consumers.
Definitely. And they're also looking at logistical shifts. Maybe need to warehouse more inventory physically inside the U.S. rather than shipping everything direct.
Right. Import it in bulk, pay duty once, then ship domestically.
Exactly. And interestingly, there are also reports they've already started cutting back on their U.S. advertising spend, maybe by around 20%, likely anticipating these higher costs and maybe a change in consumer demand.
So for the listener, those super cheap finds might start looking, well, less cheap. Could curb some impulse buying?
It could. It might shift buying habits, maybe towards slightly more considered purchases, if the price advantage shrinks.
Okay, what about U.S. brands and the logistics companies here, the 3PLs? How does this affect them?
Well, for U.S. brands, this could actually level the playing field a bit, competitively speaking. If the cost of importing directly goes up for overseas sellers, domestic brands might look more attractive on price.
An advantage for made in the USA or goods already here.
Potentially, yes. And for the 3PLs, the third-party logistics providers, we might see an increase in what's called transload volume.
Explain that.
That's where those overseas sellers decide, okay, instead of shipping millions of tiny packages direct, let's ship big containers in bulk to a U.S. 3PL. The 3PL then receives it, maybe stores it, breaks it down, and handles the final delivery within the U.S. This could actually become a bigger part of the business for U.S. logistics firms.
So more business potentially flowing to U.S. logistics hubs?
Could be, but it also means more work for them, especially on the customs side.
Right. You mentioned brokers earlier.
Yeah, even if items are still technically under $800 from other countries, ending the exemption for China, Hong Kong, and the increased scrutiny overall will likely mean way more formal customs entries are needed.
Formal entries meaning more paperwork, filings.
Exactly. It requires a customs broker to file properly. So 3PLs might need to beef up their compliance staff, their customs expertise.
But there's an upside too.
Definitely. It's a chance for U.S. brands and 3PLs to really shine by highlighting their reliability, their faster domestic shipping times once the goods are here, and maybe smoother processes for things like returns, which can be a real pain point with direct from overseas orders.
Okay, now the big one, the consumer, us, the listeners. How does this hit our wallets and our patients?
Yeah, the direct impact. First, expect higher prices. That example you hear tossed around, like a $10 shirt potentially costing $12 or $13 after duty is factored in, that seems pretty realistic.
So a noticeable jump.
Plus, you might see additional brokerage fees get passed along by some sellers, depending on how they handle the import process.
And delivery times.
Likely longer. With more scrutiny, more packages potentially needing formal entry or going through that enhanced Type 86 process, things will probably slow down at the border. Expect maybe an extra 2 to 5 days added to delivery times for items coming from affected regions or subject to new rules.
So pricier and slower, not a great combo for shoppers. What about the actual nuts and bolts of compliance, the data side of things?
Right. The expectation is mandatory electronic filings through ACE, the Automated Commercial Environment. That's CBP's main system.
And these filings will need more.
More detail, much more. More specific HTS codes to classify the goods accurately. Clearer info on who the actual shipper is. And potentially, seller identification data similar to what the EU uses with its IOIS system for VAT collection.
Okay, and a really crucial point. Any shipments flagged for forced labor concerns, especially under UFLPA, will be automatically disqualified. No de minimis, likely stopped altogether.
That UFLPA compliance piece seems huge, so it sounds like a much higher bar for data accuracy and compliance overall. Have other places gone through this? Any lessons learned?
Yeah, it's helpful to look internationally. The European Union, for instance, got rid of its 22 low-value VAT relief back in July 2021.
And what happened there? Did e-commerce tank?
Interestingly, no. They reported about a 7% rise in customs revenue collected, which makes sense, but they saw only a minimal slowdown in overall cross-border e-commerce volume.
Okay. And the UK.
The UK also scrapped its similar £15 threshold in January 2021. Their approach is a bit different. They make the online marketplaces responsible for collecting the VAT at the point of sale for goods under $135.
So the platforms handle the tax up front. Right. And the big takeaway from both seems to be, yes, prices likely go up, but the disruption might be manageable if the platforms step up, collect taxes proactively where needed, and really improve the quality and completeness of the data they provide at the border.
But are things exactly the same in the US context? Could it play out differently here?
That's a really important question. The scale is different, the specific duties are different, consumer expectations might be different. So while the EU and UK offer clues, it's not a perfect comparison. We'll have to see how it unfolds here.
Okay, super helpful context.
Yeah.
So let's make this really practical. For listeners who are actually in this world running an e-commerce business, managing logistics, importing goods, what should they be doing right now? Like an action checklist.
Yeah, absolutely. Being proactive is key. So based on the timeline, here's what businesses should probably focus on.
Okay, lay it on us. What's step one? Like immediately.
Okay, so right now between today and say the end of April, audit your SKUs. Go through every product code you ship direct to consumer that falls under that $800 value.
Figure out what's actually using de minimis.
Exactly. And then start modeling your costs. What will the landed cost look like if you have to pay duty? Use the standard MFN, Most Favored Nation, duty rates for those calculations. Get a real picture of the financial hit.
Okay, audit and model costs. What's next? By May 1st,
By May 1st, which is right before that May 2nd deadline for China-Hong Kong, you absolutely need to have your systems updated, your ERP, your OMS.
Your inventory and order systems.
Right. Make sure you have accurate HS codes, correct country of origin declarations, and importantly, those fields ready for forced labor attestations. Get your data house in order.
Makes sense. What about looking ahead into Q2, like April, May, June?
During Q2, start talking seriously with your 3PL partners. Discuss options for bonded storage, which might be useful if you shift to bulk importing. Explore if there are still ways to use Section 321 consolidation strategies, maybe for goods from countries not affected yet. Plan your logistics.
And for those who want to maybe influence the final rules.
Before CBP drops that final ELVS rule, likely in the summer, consider engaging with the process. You can still look at the docket. The common ID was 2025-00051. See what others said. Maybe reach out to trade associations. Understand what the final data requirements might look like.
Okay. And lastly, what about communicating with customers?
Crucial. Marketing and customer service teams need to be prepared. Be transparent about potential shipping delays. Explain clearly how duties might be collected. Will it be part of the price upfront? Will the carrier collect it on delivery? Setting expectations is key to avoiding angry customers.
That's a really solid checklist. Thanks. So bringing this all together, what's the big picture here, the main shift we're seeing?
The bottom line is the era of easily tapping into that $800 U.S. de minimis duty-free allowance, especially from certain regions, is ending. It's a fundamental structural change for cross-border e-commerce into the U.S.
And the key implications listeners should keep rattling around in their heads.
Near term. Definitely expect increased costs and more complexity, more hoops to jump through.
Mm-hmm.
But longer term, this could actually push the whole industry towards more transparent, more compliant, maybe even more resilient supply chains.
Is there a silver lining here? Any opportunities emerging from this?
I think so, yeah. Especially for U.S.-based logistics providers, the 3PLs. There's a real opportunity to differentiate themselves.
Wow.
By offering services like managing inventory that's already duty paid and sitting in the U.S., ready for fast domestic shipping.
Yeah.
By providing robust screening for product safety or compliance issues, basically offering reliability and speed that direct from overseas might struggle with under the new rules.
Okay. So as we wrap up this deep dive, lots to think about. Maybe a final question for our listeners to chew on.
Yeah.
How do you think these changes will ultimately reshape the way we shop online, the way goods move across borders? And thinking ahead, what kinds of adaptations by businesses and by consumers might end up being the most beneficial as this new landscape takes shape?
That's the multi-billion dollar question, isn't it? It's
yeah.
Definitely a space we'll be watching very, very closely.
Absolutely.